each Thursday, and Thursday Night Footy is back. Merciful heavens, no wonder I'm in a good mood today. Sydney and St Kilda tonight. So Brenton Sanderson, Strategy 2023. It's our McCafe Coffee Catch-Up. McCafe celebrating 30 years of coffee fit for an Aussie. Sando, welcome.
G'day, Jared.
Did you hear Max Gawn on the way in?
Yeah, I did. That was fantastic. He actually gave up a lot, as in he was very honest and very open about, I guess, the strategy that Melbourne are using with him and Brodie Grundy. I got a lot out of that. It was fantastic.
So here's that conversation with Simon Goodwin. I can get you a seventh All-Australian or a second premiership captain. And then the two of them as they're trying to make it work. So this was where we chatted last week. Max is not an elite ruckman anymore because he's not there. They're trying to work out, well, if you're in control, you stay in. I love Max's thoughts. Well, if I'm going to be a forward, I want to be trained as a forward.
Yeah.
I want to be in on strategy. I want to be in on the demands. I want to be in on the technique. I want to be in on the practice, not just the ruckman who's drifting down and sort of lingering in the forward line.
Yeah, it was fascinating. And every player would say that, and particularly Max would say, I'd love another premiership. And if the coach can find me a way or a structure or a formula that's going to help us win another flag, then I'll take that. I just still think personally, this is just my thoughts, I still think Max Gawn is better as the alpha male, the captain who plays 80% of game time in the ruck, and the impact he has behind the ball, but also to drifting forward as a ruck. I still think he's a very competent forward, but I think his best value to the Melbourne team, if they are going to win a flag, will be in the ruck. And I think, 80% of his time should be in the ruck as well.
Yeah, so Max Gawn, if you didn't catch it at the top of the program, it's there on the podcast. I also like the sort of clutching at the footy from 2021 and then releasing that idea. So last year they were clearly reaching for it. That's what we're trying to get back to. And now they're trying to be something different, realizing that whatever that was, as a correspondent put it, that was lightning in a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah, it was now
evolve into something else.
Yeah, and footy's constantly changing and evolving, and I think sometimes it's ways that really strong clubs that win premierships, they all they talk about is that time that they won the premiership and they get left behind. They try and recapture that same style, but you have to keep changing and evolving, and we're seeing now, particularly Collingwood and Port Adelaide, the way that they're playing at the moment, it's almost a bit of catch up for the rest of the teams in the industry now. Do you play your own style, or do you try and stay ahead of the curve, or do you play copycat? But definitely you can falter if you try and return to a previous period of success and think that's the way we're always going to win. And they were playing brilliant footy. I remember talking, coming in and talking with you, Jared, every week about the style they were playing, and no side could get near them late in games. They were so fit. They had so much run. But now, they're playing with the two rucks. And they're finding a new identity, I guess. And a part of it is how they use both of those boys most effectively with Grundy and Gawn. And I want to talk about it later when we talk about the King's birthday game, because I think it'll be intriguing how they use both those boys.
So three games that have our attention: Port Adelaide and the Bulldogs, Melbourne and Collingwood, and Carlton and Essendon. But before we get to those, I thought let's do a little bit of reminiscing through strategy, shall we? You've been in coaches' boxes throughout Lance Franklin's glorious career: Geelong, Adelaide, Collingwood. I wondered, when he was in his pomp, when he was maximum threat, what sort of strategic headache was he?
Yeah, a nightmare. And you typically spend a fair amount of time in match committee working out the best strategy. So I think at his prime, he was most dangerous when he came up to the stoppage as a key forward, because he would bring a key defender with him. And and you think back to some of his most memorable goals over his career, whether it was the that hurdling goal out of the centre square against Collingwood when he kicked it from 70 metres out. And I think my favourite, most people's favourite, is the Hooker goal, where Hooker was trying to chase him down the wing at the MCG when he took the ball at the interchange gates and had three bounces. I think that was when he was at his most dangerous, because he would take a tall key defender up the ground and then race him back to goal. So I think back to the 2012 prelim final when I was coaching Adelaide. We played with a seventh defender. We played with Ricky Henderson as a seventh defender, who would effectively come back behind the ball, provide an aerial threat, and also give us a little bit of run out there. But we didn't have the right matchup for. We felt we had the right matchup for him inside 50, which was Rutten. But if you can picture Ben Rutten as the fullback for the Crows. He was very good in 1v1 contests. He was big. He was strong. His aerial work was excellent. But Buddy would just take him straight up to the wing, exactly what I explained before. And that wasn't Ben Rutten's strength, was to get up the ground and get back. So as he left 50, he would hand over to Andy Otten, who was more of a mobile, sort of hybrid defender. He could take Buddy up the field. Didn't have the ability to match him in the aerial, but at least he could run with him. And then when Buddy reset inside 50, he would hand back over. So in that prelim final, which we lost by a couple of points, he kicked 3 goals, 5. So Buddy kicked 3 goals, 5. I would have taken that. And I said to the coaches after the game, you know, he still had 8 shots for goal, but he was in such electric form back then. That was when he was at his absolute peak. He kicked 69 goals, 64 that season in 2012. But I would have taken 3 goals from Buddy Franklin pregame. And so I thought we had that strategy. We had that strategy right. But yeah, he provided some headaches when we were at Collingwood. He provided some headaches when we were at Geelong. Or I guess most recently, actually a young player called Henry Shady from Tasmania played one game on Buddy, actually did a pretty good job for Collingwood up at the SCG. The perfect matchup was Darcy Moore. So remember, you know, Darcy Moore playing as that, when he first went back as a key defender, when you think about his ability to get up the ground, get back to goal, good in the air, but they're, in a game we played, Collingwood, Darcy Moore got injured. It was Jack Madson's first game for the club, and Darcy Moore got injured in the second quarter. Buddy ended up kicking 6 goals, 4 out of 11 goals, 7, and Collingwood lost by 2 points.
Oh,
so he was probably the difference in that game too. But you know, I think Jared, my dad was a great story. My dad is a great storyteller. My grandfather was a great storyteller. I think when you think back to Buddy Franklin, I can't wait to tell my own son and then my grandchildren when they come about some of those memories of Buddy Franklin. He's one of the greatest players I've ever seen, without question. And I talked about that hurdling goal against Collingwood out of the centre square, the hooker goal, that elimination when he kicked 7 against the Crows in that elimination final at Marvel Stadium, when he kicked the goal that put him in front with, you know, seconds to go. He's a small forward in a tall body. You know, he's 6'7", whatever he is, or 6'4", 6'5", but he plays like a small, you know, he's just so agile. He can break tackles. He gets from contest to contest, but he's so good in the air as well. And like I said, I just think he was most dangerous, or when he was at his most dangerous is when he went up the ground. He came up to stoppage, he ran through stoppage and then exploded forward. So I think We're really blessed to have lived through a time, and for you, Jared, to have called all of his games. I think we'll remember him as one of the greatest players the game's ever seen. Only 22 players in the history of the game have played 350, so it's a magnificent achievement. And I think it's going to be fun to watch tonight.
And it may very well be the last time that we see any movement in the top five of the all-time goal-kicking list. He'll go to outright fourth. Yep. Hopefully, if he kicks a goal tonight, that'll be his place. And we may never live to see that group move again.
Yeah, even the fact, Jared, and I was looking at this last night and I was getting goosebumps reading it, you know, just thinking back to his career. But he's the only player in history to kick five goals or more against every team in the competition. So obviously he was at Hawthorn and kicked 5+ against the Swans, and now he went to the Swans and kicked. So he's kicked five goals or more against every team in the competition.
Yep.
It is amazing. It is an amazing stat. So 8-time All-Australian, now 36 years old, playing his 350th game. It's absolutely brilliant.
We salute Buddy tonight. So a bit of retrospective strategy talk and how Coach's Box is planned. You would have had to – was he the player that you go, well, if he gets hold of us, once we've played all our cards, just don't get too wound up in it?
Yeah. Without a doubt. And, you know, with 18 players on the field, it's very hard for one player to have such a significant influence. But Buddy was able to do that, like Gary Ablett Sr. You know, he could change a game just being one player on the field. But you're right. Like I said before, I certainly went into games thinking if we can get away with Buddy kicking 4 or 5, we're a chance to win, which is crazy to even think that, right? So that was him at his absolute best.
Brenton Sanderson, Strategy 2023, three big games to zero in on next. Melbourne's weather, shower or two, a top of 17 for City Power, inspecting and maintaining the CBD underground electrical network.
Waitley on SEN.
Strategy 2023 with Brenton Sanderson, round 13, three key markers beginning on Friday night with Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs. Port going for their 10th straight victory. They just played. It was gather round. It was in driving rain. It was a beaut game, and Port got over the Dogs from behind in the last quarter. So, Brenton Sanderson, will we do the Dogs first?
Yeah. The Dogs are interesting, Jared. I thought they tried really hard against Geelong last week. They had more disposals. They had 20 more contested possessions against the Cats last week. They had 12 more tackles, and they had four more inside 50s. But at the moment, I think what's concerning me about the Dogs is they're giving up turnovers. It's as simple as that. So defensively, they've really improved. But Geelong scored 65 points from turnovers alone against the Bulldogs. And 25 points out of that 65 points were in the front half. So there's two issues for me with their ball use. It's the exit kick. So when they've got the ball deep in defence, they're having a little bit of trouble moving the ball effectively out of their back line. But also, too, they're still having issues with that final kick inside forward 50, which a lot of clubs are. They're not alone. But even the week previously when they got beaten by the Suns were so much more effective with that final kick inside forward 50. They were able to retain the ball once they kicked the ball inside forward 50. The week before against the Suns, they only managed to score on 16% of their inside 50s, which is a big concern. And I still love their midfield. Bontempelli's having a great year. McRae, Liberatore, Smith. But at the moment, it's just that exit kick and that inside 50 kick, which is their main concern. And defensively, they've improved, but their offensive numbers are really poor. Norton's two goals a game. Ugelhagen and Lobb are a goal a game players. Waitman's also one goal a game. But that only finishes you at the end of the year with a 45 goal kicker and two or three players with 20 or 25. It's not enough. It's not enough for a premiership team. And you just think back to last year. I know it was an incredible season by Geelong, but Cameron, Hawkins and Stengel combined for 185 goals between those three players, 67, 65, 53. It just doesn't look at the moment whether that cohesion in offence, that connection piece with that inside 50 kick is a problem for the moment for the Western Bulldogs. And they're going to come up against a side who are defending really well. Their pressure is excellent. Port Adelaide, they can give up a score, Port, but their pressure through the midfield is elite at the moment. So that's going to be the big challenge for the Dogs this week.
There's such a curiosity, the Dogs, because the numbers in the game have become like a religion. The numbers love the Bulldogs.
That's
like,
right.
Top-ranked players, English, Bontempelli, Liberatore, top-ranked forwards against expectation, Caleb Daniel, Jack McRae. But you mentioned the eye test last week. They don't pass the eye test. So you can put whatever numbers you like in front of me and charts and names, but there's only been the one block so far this year where they've actually looked like the team they aspire to be. In the last 2 weeks, they've fallen shy of that. I'm so interested to see if they can put it right on Friday, on tomorrow night.
Yeah, you're right, Jared. And I say this openly as well. I refer to statistics so much when I'm doing this segment with you, but I don't use them obviously in my own coaching, I don't use stats much. You put up a couple of key themes or a couple of key objectives and you live off them. I think players can almost get drowned in numbers and, you know, particularly offensive numbers. And I've referred to a lot in this segment, I think if you can prevent the opposition from marking the ball, which the Bulldogs are doing better, but that pressure rating number as a team, if you can enforce that amongst your group at AFL level, but also at community level, if you can pressure the opposition into mistakes, you're going to win the game. And at the moment, when you pressure the Western Bulldogs, they turn it over too much and they get scored against going back the other way. And that's why I refer to that exit kick. It doesn't feel like at the moment they've got enough good ball use out of their back half. If you dial up the pressure in the front half against them, you can score back going the other way. And I think that's their concern, the exit kick and that last kick inside forward 50. And I think Port Adelaide and what we're seeing with them at the moment, they should be able to maintain that high pressure rating for long enough against the Dogs to cause them some grief.
All right, give us a look inside Port Adelaide and what they're doing at the moment. 9 straight wins.
Yeah, well, their profile's very good. And when I talk about profile, I mean their overall offence, they're playing a very uncomplicated style, very similar to Collingwood. I think Collingwood and Port Adelaide, they're a low disposal team that play fast and direct offence. They've always got run support. So whenever a Port Adelaide player takes a mark through the midfield or a mark down back, there's always a runner going by. They don't always give it, but their ability to keep speed on the game and to prevent the opposition's defence from getting set is what's really helping them. And you contrast that against, say, a Carlton, which we talk about a lot, who share the ball around, take a lot of marks behind the ball. And you know, you only see this when you go to games live because the broadcast vision won't show you behind the ball. But when you chip the ball around and you play a high possession game, it allows the opposition to get their defence set behind you. But what Port do is they go fast. They go direct and they go fast, same as Collingwood. So you just can't get your defence set. You get a lot of 1v1 matchups in a lot of space. So that's helping Marshall. That's helping Finlayson. Rioli's been a really good contributor for Port Adelaide this year. He's clever. He's fast. He puts pressure on. And we're seeing a young midfield quickly evolve into one of the most impressive in the competition. Rosie, Butters, Horn Francis. All young kids who are all having outstanding seasons. And you throw a Brownlow medalist in there in Wines. I really like Drew. He can be a run with player if they need to. They're getting high inside 50 numbers, number 2 in the competition. And they're a really good clearance side, number 4 in the competition as well. And I refer to it a lot. They are the second best team in the competition at preventing marks.
Yep.
So they don't let you, they actually deny you the ball because they don't let you hold possession. That first half, though, last week against Hawthorn, I've never seen anything like it. They kicked 16-9 in the first half. And they kicked 10 goals in the first half. Or 10 of those 16 were from intercept possessions. So that's pressuring the opposition into mistake. And I talked before about that pressure rating, which coaches use. It was at a number called 198, which if you can get 200 for any blocks in games, it's exceptional. They had 198 for the whole first half. So, and talk about mark chains. They kept Hawthorn to 29 marks in the first half. Going into this game, Hawthorn were averaging 95 marks per game. So to keep them to 29 marks in the first half was just insane. And they actually finished with 72 inside 50s, which is ridiculous. Sides are getting 45, 50, you know, low 50s. They had 72 inside 50s. So they are the real deal, Port Adelaide. They are scary to watch when they're in that sort of mood. And I know, you know, watch the press conferences afterwards. Ken Hinckley was absolutely wrapped with that first half. And I know Sam Mitchell said that they just were uncompetitive, Hawthorn. But if you can get Port Adelaide in that mood and they can start that well against the Western Bulldogs, if they can pressure the Dogs into mistakes, yeah, that's where the game's going to be won. If they can maintain that pressure rating, get on top in the midfield. And once again, we talk about that young midfield of Port Adelaide against that midfield of Western Bulldogs. Potentially, that's where the game will be won. If those young Port Adelaide mids can get on top, I think they'll win the game.
Yeah, so mash it all together. What does it look like?
No, I think it's Port Adelaide. I think they've got the ability to be able to maintain that pressure. I think their uncomplicated game style, their offence is just so simple. It's work rate from contest to contest. Don't let the opposition's defence get set. And then when the opposition get the ball, take away mark chains and pressure them. It's really simple for Port Adelaide and they're executing it really well. So I think Port Adelaide win this game quite comfortably. And
they're track specialists at Marvel as well. But it is a little glimpse into your football following soul. 9 in a row, they're either in great form or you're due a loss. So we'll see what happens. It's the Dogs and Port Adelaide on Friday night. We'll move ourselves to Carlton and Essendon, the Sunday night game. Brenton Sanderson for a McCafe coffee catch-up. McCafe is celebrating 30 years of coffee that is well and truly fit for an Aussie. Sunday night, it'll be a spectacle, all right. Carlton and Collingwood with all that's entwined. Carlton and Essendon with all that's entwined in that. Essendon, they're living inside the eight. They're winning their close ones to keep themselves there, and they might be covering over a few moments in between. And Carlton can't get out of their own way at the moment. Do you want to start with the Bombers?
Yeah, well, it's funny, Jared. I might be on a bit of an island here, but I'm not as bullish about Essendon as what the general feeling is now around the industry. And I do think they've improved a lot. I think Brad Scott's a great appointment. It's so much fun to watch them play at the moment. But I think there's some There's some accounting stats at the moment which just concern me a little bit with their profile. And for me, it's they're a high possession, high kicking team that make a lot of mistakes. And I just talked about the Western Bulldogs before, about their inability to be able to get that exit kick right and then that last kick inside forward 50. Essendon are a high mark team, which I just don't know if that's a positive in the modern game. I talked before about the way that Collingwood and Port Adelaide are playing at the moment, which is low possession, fast and direct. And Essendon are just playing a little bit of that keepings off game at the moment. But they give up too mark. So they give up too many marks to the opposition is what I'm trying to say. So even when Essendon win, they still let their opposition take 100 marks per game. When they lose Essendon, their opposition takes 111 marks per game. That's way too much. So just remember I referred to Port Adelaide, who only allowed Hawthorn 29 marks in a half. I just feel at the moment if Essendon can't fix this a little bit with their defence and preventing opposition mark chains, but also to if they can't work out this sort of high possession kicking game, I just think that's going to come unstuck. They've got a pretty good draw in the back half of the year. I think when you look at the ease of the fixturing, there's a lot of winnable games. I think they're going to play finals, Essendon. That's not what concerns me. It's just they're low pressure, 16th in tackles. They're 16th in clearances, so they're not fantastic around stoppage and clearance, and they're a high clanger team. So there's a few things that worry me at the moment. I just don't think that high possession game is sustainable. When they come up against the top teams in finals, I just don't think it's going to be a game plan that's going to have success when it really matters later in the year. I think we're going to have some fun watching them play over the next block or this sort of second half of the year. We're going to see some really fun footy from them. But at the moment, their profile just concerns me a fraction. So I think they'll beat Carlton. And it's funny, I've almost tipped Carlton every week I've come in, Jarrett. And I was almost the last believer of Carlton. I've got a lot of close friends and they love how I keep backing them in. But I think now we know what Carlton is, don't we? After talking about them for 10, 11 rounds, I just think we know now what Carlton is. They're a good contest side. They're a good clearance side, but they're a poor kicking side. And they haven't quite got their offense worked out. As they've tried to evolve their offense, it's been to the detriment of the way that they've moved the ball and their contest work's struggling now. So we know that kicking is a problem for them. They play a style of play which doesn't fit the cattle that they've got. But yeah, arch rivals, Essendon v Carlton. Anything can happen in these games, and I think it's going to be an absolute cracker to watch.
What happens after you have the moment that Michael Voss gives voice to, we're just not good enough at the moment? What happens after that?
Yeah, you have to rebuild belief and confidence. And you have to, and I've said this before, you learn a lot about your squad and your list in moments like this where sometimes you'll pick a player with less skill and potentially less upside for a player that wants to bleed for the side. And what I mean by that, that determination, that ability to be able to come in and tackle and pressure and chase, and you know a player that won't give up on effort and intensity for four quarters. So those chase, rundown tackles, that ability to stand under, you know, play with courage, stand under a marking contest or go back with the flight. Sometimes you're better off picking those players that you know are going to be consistently strong in the contest. Might be the best way to explain it. It's not back to the drawing board. I've just got a feeling, and I spoke to a few really strong Carlton people over the last few days, not at the club, but people who watch them closely. It will turn, because there's too much talent on the list for it not to. You can't just roll over and give up. Particularly if you're playing elite sport. And sometimes you just go through runs like these and the coach will pull every rabbit out of the hat trying to find new ways to engage the group or to motivate the group. But ultimately, the leaders get together and something just will click and they'll have a good quarter or a good little block of footy and the confidence and the belief will return. But as I said, there's too much talent on this list for this not to turn. But it's a pivotal moment when a coach comes out and says we're just not at the standard that we need to be at. No more talking to the media that, you know, this is not us. It's more about now. I've used this just recently with my team. It's sometimes you just put up like no words. We just want actions. So there's no more strategy. There's no more magic tricks. if you like. It's no more fooling anyone. Let's just see actions, not words. So you can come in and see, and I've talked about it before, the whiteboard when you walk into a dressing room before you play a match, sometimes there's just nothing there. It's just a quick meeting with the boys that says, boys, today it's actions, not words.
Yeah, simple as that. A bit of heart and soul footy.
Sometimes you just need to pull that trick.
Yeah. Yep. So this is still such a big game with a crowd that's going to be there on Sunday night. Results against Essendon matter, like results against Collingwood matter. So they're probably not quite – they need the mental freedom. And you've described as playing with full heads. Emma Murray was so compelling last week. Is there'll be when the you don't want the burden to lift on you because it means you're out.
Yep.
But they're as good as out. So at some point that will open up a little bit and allow them to play with more instinct and freedom and trust and all of those things that psychologically I think they're crippled by at the moment.
Yeah, it's almost like they're paralyzed when they play at the moment, and you can see that. You can see that in their, like we've talked about, their inability to play on instinct and without sort of creative flair. And when I think when they've tried to and it's failed, it's sent them further back. Instead of taking one step back to take two steps forward, they're taking two or three steps back now, where almost you, and I've had this when I played, you almost don't want the ball because you're afraid to make a mistake.
Yep.
And that's the last thing you want.
Yep. Yeah, the slipper in the cord and who's desperate that the next edge doesn't come to you because you fear you're going to grasp it.
Yep.
So the Bombers?
Yeah, it would not surprise me because, as I said, I'm the last great believer in Carlton. It would not surprise me if the Blues win this game. But like I said, I've got concerns about the Bombers too, and I'm probably on my own island where I don't love the Bombers as much as everyone else does at the moment. So I think this game could go either way, to be honest.
Okay. Brenton Sanderson, we're going to move to the King's birthday encounter. Melbourne and Collingwood, it could be as good as we get this year in home and away footy. Let's see. Waitley for Host Plus and Hyundai Tucson, tomorrow's SUV, in stock now. Monday could be the preview of anything. Qualifying finals, preliminary finals, grand finals, sold out MCG, big freeze. They'll go down the slide and then Melbourne and Collingwood go at it. High-end football, and this is rich with strategy on all sorts of fronts. Brenton Sanderson is in the chair. Where do you want to start?
I just think what I did first of all, Jerry, when you look at what's upcoming, you look at what's happened previously, and when you look at last year's two games and this corresponding game last year, it was probably when we first really took notice, I think, of Collingwood. Their second half against Melbourne on the Queen's birthday then was an 8-goal 1-1-4 second half, after about the 10-minute mark of the third quarter. Collingwood just really took over. And I think that's when we all stood up and we thought, wow, potentially the baton is being handed here from Melbourne, who were so good. And we know that they started last year with, I think, 10 wins on the trot, you know, after coming off a premiership the year before. But Collingwood, and it was their pressure and their ability to be able to sustain that pressure for four quarters against Melbourne on Queen's birthday last year. They were so effective inside forward 50. Their pressure was dialed up. And I think that's when we really took notice of Collingwood. And then they played against each other only 7 or 8 weeks later. They played each other in round 21. It was Collingwood's 11th win in a row then. And it was, again, their pressure. They had 71 tackles to 59, 18 tackles in their forward 50, Collingwood, that night. And they lost the inside 50 count, 41-65. But they were so effective and so accurate that in that game. So it was probably, like I said, the handing of the baton over from Melbourne to Collingwood. We thought this Collingwood side now is certainly the real deal. And when you look this year, I just love Collingwood's spread of goal kickers. So they've had already 8 players have kicked 10 goals or more for Collingwood. They've got multiple avenues to goal. They've got a real spread of goal kickers, which I think is really hard to defend against when it's not just one man or two guys in your forward 50 that you have to shut down, when you have to be aware of all of those players, whether it's Bobby Hill or Majacek, Ash Johnson. You know, it's so difficult to be able to say, right, if we can shut down Majacek, then we can win the game. You know, it's one of those things that I think Collingwood are doing really well at the moment. And to Melbourne's credit, they're still ranked 3 in offence. And I know Simon Goodwin talked about it last week in defence of his team and about the way that they are moving the ball. He said, you know, we're the number one offence, and that's dropped this week to number 2. But there's just a little bit like what I talked about before with the Bulldogs. It's just that last kick at the moment inside forward 50, which I think Melbourne is a bit of a concern. And they've got to have a plan for Darcy Moore in this game. So when you've got Fritsch back there and you've got Van Ruin and those small forwards, you know, Chandler, Cozzy, Spargo, they've got to do something with Darcy Moore. They've got to take him away from where the ball's going. So that's, and I'm not sure what they're going to do. Yep. I can't wait to see how you combat Darcy Moore's influence on the game. But I think for me, the only, or I've listed here five things for Simon Goodwin.
Yep, excellent.
But it's, I think at the moment, the thing with Melbourne, which is a concern, what's been a typical strength has been clearance. So they've only won 5 out of 12 games this year going head to head with their opponents around clearance. And without Oliver, that's going to be a concern, I think, for them against Collingwood. But you take out De Goey. So De Goey comes out of Collingwood. Collingwood have lost their head to head clearance contest in the last four matches as well. But what's been scary for any side that's played Collingwood is that, as I said, their effectiveness inside forward 50. They've taken double-digit marks in every game this year inside forward 50, except one, and that was where they still took 9 marks inside forward 50. Yep. So anything around sort of 8, 9, 10 marks inside forward 50, you take as a coach. But Collingwood's last 5 games, 13 against the Swans, 16 marks inside forward 50 against the Giants, 13 against Carlton, 17 against North Melbourne, and 14 against the West Coast Eagles. So May and Lever play a huge part in this game if they're going to defeat Collingwood. And what May and Lever will need to do is walk up to the midfielders this week and say, you know what's going to really help us is pressure on the ball. So when Collingwood play this fast offense, go forward footy, Melbourne need to match that in the midfield. They need to be able to put pressure on. And it's going to all come down to those three boys I mentioned before, those small demon forwards, Chandler, Spargo, Cozzy. They've got to ensure that they're assisting those midfielders by getting up the ground. And traditionalists won't like me saying this, but those small forwards have got to get right up the ground, pressure the opposition into mistakes inside forward 50, fill the gaps to allow those midfielders to get back and help outnumber. But I think what we talked about before about Max Gawn, this game is set for Max Gawn to play behind the ball. He needs to be setting up for every kick that goes inside Collingwood's forward line. Max Gawn needs to be there. So I think that bucks the trend. And we heard him speak this morning about how they structure up with Brodie Grundy. But it feels like if they need to win this game, it's on the back of Lever, May and Gawn having an influence aerial behind the ball to take away Collingwood's effective marks inside forward 50.
Okay, so just formalise my 5 bullet points so I can type them up and take them to the ground on Monday.
Okay, 5 things for me if I'm Simon Goodwin. Must win contested possession and clearance. That's number one. And we know that Collingwood are so good at pressuring the opposition into mistakes, but Melbourne are too. Melbourne's pressure is good too, but win contested ball and clearance. Number two, have a player responsible for Darcy Moore. Now, I don't know how they do that, but they've got to match him in the air, take him away from every inside 50. I think they've got to try and change their angle of offense in the front half. So Darcy Moore will rely on Collingwood's pressure in the midfield, but he'll just get in line of the ball. He'll almost have no regard for his opponent. He'll just assume or presume where the ball's coming inside forward 50 and just get there. So the more you can change angles in the attacking half with your offense, he can't get set where he wants to get set. So change angles in the front half, but have a player responsible for Darcy Moore in this game. Number three, you can't kick, and I've said this before, you can't kick the ball inside forward 50 until we're inside 70 metres.
Yep.
So no blasting it high. You must take a breath. You've got to make sure that you find a short forward mark until we're inside that sort of 70-metre arc, that imaginary 70-metre arc. I call it the launch pad. Make sure you're inside launch pad. Before you enter it inside forward 50. We can't blast the ball against Collingwood inside our forward line. Number four, we've got to dial up our forward pressure if I'm Simon Goodwin. So we've got to get the game in our half. We've got to be bold, come forward. Don't retreat. And I talked about this week with my team here. Sometimes when a side is plays fast, your natural instinct is to retreat. You want to try and race back to inside forward 50 to sort of set up your defense. You've got to have a different mindset. When they're coming really fast towards you, you've got to actually go meet it head on. You can't retreat. You've got to get up in their grill. So keep coming forward. And the final thing, we've got to get the Gawn and Grundy hit out thing right. We've got to make sure we get the right balance. So I think it's Grundy forward this week, and he might be the matchup for Moore. As crazy as that sounds,
yeah.
Let Max be Max. Play him in the ruck. maybe Grundy goes to Darcy Moore in that matchup against his former team. I think that's how they get the win.
Let's start next Thursday reviewing that list.
Okay,
and see how it came out. So the 5 bullet points: must win contest possession and clearance, be responsible for more, no blasting inside 50, dial up the forward pressure, and get the Gawn Grundy combination right. Sando, terrific.
Thanks, Jared.
Great strategy session to set us up for round 13.